everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is episode 385, Superman Sunday. I'm going to be talking about Man of Steel number 5. So it's the penultimate issue, written by Brian Michael Bendis. The art in this particular issue is by Adam Hughes. And then, of course, we have the few pages by Jason Fabok as well. Colors are by Alex Sinclair, and the art is spectacular. I don't really know what else I can say about it. It's kind of rare these days that Adam Hughes will do interiors. You know, he's much more of a cover artist these days, but seeing the way that he lays out panels, it really goes to show the strength of his storytelling, right? Which you don't always get to see, because he does mostly do covers these days. So it's a real treat to have him on the interiors. That being said, the first page of the book opens up with that circular motif that we've seen throughout, right? Like all of the issues, with the exception of issue 4, which was a close-up of Superman's eye, all the rest have opened up with a planet, right? Either Krypton or Earth. What's really cool about this one, it is Earth on the first page, but you see Rogal Zar's axe above it, like it's about to cut the Earth in half. And we also see the sun in the background. It's just a very beautiful looking image. And there's even, if you notice in the corner, like a red streak, right? And as you go to the next page, you see that that streak is from Superman. Superman is pulling Rogal Zar through space, and As he's doing that, you turn the page, he's punched. Superman is punched by Rogal Zar and basically ends up on the moon. Now, didn't really care for the way this issue started. And the reason for that is we saw last issue that cliffhanger ending with Superman using that super flare power that Geoff Johns had given him when he did his run on Superman recently. And from everything we saw, when Superman would let off that super flare, like he was completely, it exhausted all the solar radiation from his cells, right? So, and it would take him 24 hours to recover. Now, all of a sudden, he's able to use that power, but he doesn't have to take any time to recover. I don't know. It's a little bit inconsistent. Like we even saw where when he used it, I think when Jean Luen Yang took over the book, when Superman used his solar flare power, his costume was even in tatters. Like I think at one point he the first time he used it, he was naked, right? Here we see his costume doesn't look any worse for wear. It just seems choppy. Like I wanted to see the result of that, right? I wanted to see the result of, okay, he used his super flare. What effect did it have on Rogal Zar? What next, right? So yeah, it seems like Bendis like skipped a page or something. That being said, the image of Rogal Zar looking down into Kandor is really cool. So let me go on with the synopsis. So as I said, Rogal Zar punches Superman. He lands on the moon, and it looks like he's about to basically cut his head off. And at that point, Superman kind of flings himself backwards and headbutts Rogal Zar with the back of his head. There's a pitched battle on the moon. Again, really great images by Adam Hughes. Some of the panels are dichromatic, like just red and black, really showing the impact of these punches. And basically, Superman kind of gets his butt kicked, but Rogal Zar doesn't finish him. He just kind of leaves him unconscious on the moon and flies back to Earth. Then we get the interlude from Jason Fabok, the Fabok pages, where Jor-El is there once again. You know, we learned in issue 4 that's who the guy in the spaceship that looks like a giant head. It turns out it's Jor-El, and he's asking for Jonathan Kent to come with him. And Jonathan actually wants to go, but obviously Clark and Lois are not about to let that happen. But to Jor-El's point, he says the boy is struggling through no fault of his own. He's a half-breed, you know, half Kryptonian, half Earthling. And Jor-El says that shouldn't even have worked. It should not have been possible for Clark and Lois to have a child. And the effort to produce him should have killed Lois. But he's unique, and he needs time to develop and learn what kind of person he is. And as Jor-El is technically the head of the House of El, he wants to guide Jonathan, give him some experience, some perspective, take him across the galaxy, and show him things. Show him, he says, truth and mysteries you just cannot get here. So, as I said, John wants to go, but Lois and Clark are not about to let that happen. But you can tell that Clark is thinking about it. Like, maybe this would be for the best. And based on the fact that we haven't seen Lois or Jonathan throughout the series, it may be that they do relent and let John go with Jor-El, but on the condition that Lois goes as well. That's my guess. But Jonathan says he's going. Like, he literally says, I'm going. As long as Jor-El agrees to have him back before school starts. So, next page after the Fabok interlude, we see Chief Moore, Chief Melody Moore. And she looks very Adam Hughes. She looks very beautiful, very soft, but very much an Adam Hughes image. And they're talking about the fires that have been going on. They're looking, they have them all laid out on a map. And she's like asking the rest of the firemen there, she's like, do you see any shape or pattern? Because that's what Batman had said, right? Like, look for a shape, look for a pattern. And the other firemen are like, you talk to Batman? You've been here 2 days. You're already palling up to Superman and Batman. Who's next? But before they can go any further with who or what kind of pattern there might be to the fires as far as making a symbol, the fire alarm goes off and they head out to another fire. Meanwhile, Supergirl's already there and she's rescuing some kids. They're all sitting on top of a couch that she's basically carrying out of the building. The building looks like it's pretty much done for already at this point. And when Supergirl lands on the ground, puts the couch down, she sees Melody Moore and asks, Supergirl asks, have you heard from my cousin? Superman, yeah, half an hour ago, there was a big dust-up down on Sadowski. And Supergirl's like, yeah, I know, I was there. Do you know where they went? And then from off-panel, we see Will find him, and it's the Justice League. So we've got Cyborg, Green Lantern, Batman, Flash, and Wonder Woman. And they tell Supergirl that they'll go find Superman. And Supergirl is a little distraught. She's like, he said, you know, the guy that Cal's fighting said he destroyed Krypton. He came here. She's kind of losing it, right? She's freaking out. Wonder Woman's like, focus the rage, Kara. Save it for he who earned it. But where would Cal take him? And all of a sudden, it clicks for Kara. And Wonder Woman's like, what is it? She says, the moon. If you can follow me, follow me. So she flies to the moon. She finds Cal. I mean, he's basically kind of buried in the moon. Rogal Zar, you know, was hitting him so hard, he kind of drove him down into the surface of the moon. So she finds him, takes him back to the Hall of Justice. There he's surrounded by the rest of the Justice League, put him in a bed, and he's trying to recover and talking to the rest of the League. They're trying to figure out, okay, where would Rogal Zar have gone, and why did he let Superman live, basically? So Superman's kind of filling him in on what they know, and Green Lantern says, well, he's talking about ridding Earth of Kryptonians. He cleansed, he said, like a zealot. And that's when it clicks for Superman, to cleanse Kryptonians. And Superman sits up. Flash says, what? He grabs his costume, flies off, doesn't tell anybody where he's going, flies up into outer space, and then down into the Earth, to the center of the Earth, to the core. Superman says, Batman was right, cleansing. If Krypton had to be cleansed simply because Kryptonians lived on it, then now the Earth has to go. And there's some kind of device or something behind Rogal Zar in the background as he's at the center of the Earth. So to be concluded next week in the Man of Steel 6. So kind of interesting, not completely out of the range of possibility. You know, it does make sense. It makes logical sense if this is what Rogal Zar wants to do to get rid of Kryptonians. You kind of wonder, though, so why did he destroy Kandor? I mean, there's only two Kryptonians left, right? Just Supergirl and Superman. So why destroy Earth? I mean, is he going to destroy Earth just because Kryptonians live there now? Because of Superman and Supergirl? Doesn't totally make it. Like, wouldn't it be easier just to kill those two? I mean, if anybody has the ability to escape the Earth being destroyed, it would be Superman and Supergirl. So I don't know that it makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. And the other thing that's kind of weird about it is that we kind of know, I mean, Jason Fabok told me last time I talked to him that issue 6 is all his issue, right? So it's going to wrap everything up. And so what I assumed that the Fabok issue was going to be focusing on expanding that story from the interlude and not telling the story of Superman and Rogal Zar. I thought that would be kind of resolved already in issue 5, but obviously it's not. And we are going to have to have the final battle between Superman and Rogal Zar and what happens there. I don't want to spoil it. I mean, I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but based on the solicits, I have a pretty good idea of how, and when I say solicits, the solicits for Brian Michael Bendis' work on Action Comics, starting with 1001, there are some clues there about the way that that Superman perhaps saves the Earth. So whether or not that's actually true or not, I won't know, and obviously until I read issue 6. So it'll be kind of a wait and see. But I did enjoy this issue, especially, as I said, the Adam Hughes art. I'm still not completely sold on Rogal Zar as a villain, and that might be because the motivations are somewhat vague. We haven't heard enough about why he dislikes Kryptonians. You know, in issue 1, we heard about him, saying that the Kryptonians were subjugating other races and, in their pursuit of science, they were overstepping their authority and overstepping their bounds and persecuting other planets, using them for their natural resources and what have you. But, the Galactic Council that he was speaking to didn't buy that. They said that wasn't true. And there were hints that Rogal Zar had some kind of bad history or grudge against Krypton, right? So if that was explained a little more, then maybe he would be a little bit more of a fleshed out villain rather than seeming somewhat of a mustache twirler. And I don't know, I don't particularly care for his character design either. The way he looks is kind of, so I don't know, definitely not my favorite Superman villain. I have no problem with Bendis wanting to bring, kind of a new arch nemesis for Superman. I mean, he's got Lex Luthor, he's got Doomsday. Never been a particularly big fan of Doomsday either. I mean, he's almost a force of nature rather than, a character. But obviously, Lex is Superman's greatest enemy, despite the fact there's such a disparity in power level. But no, I don't have a particular problem with Bendis creating a character. I just, like I said, I think I don't really care for his visual design. And it did bother me a little at first that Bendis was kind of retconning somebody else in and something else, another facet, into the backstory of Superman and the destruction of Krypton. I kind of let that go to some extent, and we still haven't gotten that full story. We still haven't really gotten proof, only speculation so far at this point, that Rogal Zar actually did have a hand in the destruction of Krypton. So I imagine we're going to be seeing a lot more of Rogal Zar beyond this Man of Steel 6 miniseries. And it's going to be interesting to see how it all finishes up, and also to read it all together in one sitting as one story. I definitely don't think it's as successful as John Byrne's Man of Steel in 86 that kind of reintroduced his version of Superman, a Superman that was not quite as overpowered as the original Superman was for his first, 50 years of existence. So I am enjoying this story. I've talked several times about wondering how it's all going to read as far as visually, because there has been a different artist on each issue, with the exception of issue 2, where I think there were two artists. We had Doc Shaner and Steve Rude. And then, of course, you have the Fabok pages in each one. But Fabok does all of 6, so I expect that issue will be really, really good visually, because Fabok's one of the best artists working today. So, I enjoyed issue 5. Again, I think I would have got even more out of it if I understood Rogozar's motivations a little better, or if they were explained a little better. But again, I think that will come with time. So it's a tall task. I'm sure Brian Michael Bendis has so many ideas about Superman that it's like, I think as a writer, sometimes it's hard, right? Like, what do you trim out? What do you edit out? What do you leave for later? It's got to be a challenge. So I definitely think that some of the other plot lines that he had going on early, as we talked about on last Superman Sunday, they're not going to get resolved in this 6-issue miniseries. So although it may have started out and seemed like, okay, we're going to understand where these fires are coming from, and we're going to understand about this new reporter at the Daily Planet, and we're going to find out what happened to John and Lois, and we're going to find out more about this relationship Superman has with the fire chief, Melody Moore. Like, it's too much to fit, right? So I think some of these threads are threads that Bendis kind of started, and they're probably going to play out throughout his runs on Action Comics and Superman, which is perfectly fine. It's a little bit more of an old school style of storytelling, rather than kind of writing for the trade, which is ironic in a way, because there are some who would say that Bendis is to blame for all that, if you want to put it that way. His decompressed style of storytelling, specifically on Ultimate Spider-Man, kind of led to the, okay, let's take one story, make sure it spreads out over 5 or 6 issues, and then that's a trade, and then, again and again and again. And each individual issue doesn't give you as much story as comics used to. I think a lot of it has to do with just, again, the style, times change. There's the art now is more polished, bigger panels. So you get less story, right? The art's a lot tighter and cleaner, so you don't get as many words, and you don't even get as many pages anymore. I mean, most books now are only 20 pages. So it's a different era. But I find it interesting because, like I said, and there's always an argument, right? Like, what came first? Like, did Bendis start writing for the trade because that was like the trend? Or did trade start because that's the way Bendis was writing? And he's not the only one. There are others like right around that same time, but it was kind of the zeitgeist of the time, and comics just kind of headed that direction. So it'd be interesting. I would be happy to see comics kind of steer back toward the longer plot lines. I mean, I think Chris Claremont's X-Men is a great example where, you'd have plot lines that would kind of run behind the scenes for 6 months or a year before you finally found out like what happened or got a conclusion to that kind of story. These days, they're pretty much 5 or 6 issues, sometimes 4, sometimes 7 at the most, and then that's it. Like, everything's wrapped up. But I don't mind. And I mean, there are a few other writers that have maybe 1 or 2 plot lines, but like in the old days, especially like I mentioned the Claremont X-Men, you'd have like 4 or 5 different plot lines running along in the background that would eventually lead to, full-blown stories that would get the spotlight. So it'll be interesting to see what Bendis does. I think objectively, I'm not enjoying this Man of Steel miniseries as much as I enjoyed the Dan Jurgens run on Action. I thought that was, you know, just spectacular. Some of Dan's best work on that character. And not quite enjoying it as much as the Superman title either that Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason were doing, because they were really focusing on family, right? It was Lois, it was John, it was Clark. And obviously, Lois and John aren't even in the book, right? I mean, they're in the Fabok pages, and we know probably they're going to go with Jor-El. It seems like the most logical at this point. But it's, you know, obviously Bendis's story can't be about family if the family's not even together. So, again, you know, I talked several times about Bendis maybe wanting to have Superman as, you know, a bachelor and not have the baggage of Lois and John so he could tell the stories he wants to tell. And I guess this is his way of getting his wish. But again, it feels a little cheap to me. I mean, better than killing him, for sure, or retconning him out of existence, or whatever, you know, he wanted to do. But, I mean, this is where Superman is right now. And you want to write Superman, you need to come in and write him with John and with Lois. I think they're a big part of his story now. And Tomasi and Gleason proved that you could tell great stories with Superman as a dad and as a husband. So I understand it, right? Bendis wants to be able to tell his Superman stories without baggage. But again, you wanted to write Superman and this is where he is. You got to take the good with the bad. So I don't know. I guess at the end of the day, if the stories are really good, like when he starts his run on Superman and his when Action starts back up with 1001, if the stories are good, then you know, you forgive a lot of other little foibles, but I guess we'll see. It's going to be very interesting when we start getting these books on a, you know, bi-weekly basis, how they play out. It's been nice to have Man of Steel weekly, especially because he has tried to build in so many cliffhangers and we don't really have to wait that long before we find out the answers. But once he gets into the flow of the regular titles, I think we'll have a better feel for his take on the character. And being able to go back and read Man of Steel in one sitting from 1 to 6, that'll give us a good idea as well. So I think I've said more than enough about Man of Steel number 5 and Bendis' take on Superman for this episode. So as always, I want to thank you all for joining me. Don't forget, our podcast is available on iTunes and Stitcher. We really appreciate any reviews you give us on those platforms, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Really helps raise our level of visibility so other comic lovers and podcast listeners can find us. We really appreciate that. And all past episodes are available on those two sites as well. You can also go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure and check out all our other coverage on pop culture, movies, TV shows, all that kind of great stuff. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Speaking of conventions, I will be at the mother of all conventions, San Diego Comic-Con, along with Manny in just a couple weeks. If you're going to be there, be sure and hit us up on one of those aforementioned social media platforms, because we'd love to meet up with you. We'd love to meet listeners, take pictures, hook you up with a cool Comic Source lanyard, and all that kind of good stuff. So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.